Great track there from Jim Lee, all coming back to me now. Now, without doubt, one of the most exciting bands to come out of Great Britain in the past 50 years were Slade. They had no less than 23 top 20 singles, of which 6 were number one hits, plus 6 smash albums. Slade have become a firm favourite in the hearts of pop fans all over the world. Now, bass and violin and keyboard player, songwriter and arranger with Slade, and now solo artist Jim Lee is back with a re-release on vinyl of his 2007 solo album Therapy and the single The Smile of Elvis. And Jim Lee joins me on the line now. Hi Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, doing well, thank you. Love that song. And we'll get to your solo album and the new single in a bit, but we've got to talk about Slade. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine.
Great. Now, I mean, what a ride that must have been. How do you look back on those days now?
Well, it was 25 years of my life. It was I left school and joined the band, and it was great. There were some tricky times at first. You know, there was a big there was an age gap between myself and the other three, but that soon got repaired as soon as I started arranging the tracks. And obviously, I was the more musical one of the band because I'd been classically trained and all the rest of it. But you know, we all those things were ironed out very early on, and then we were like a band of brothers for those the rest of the 25 years. Mm. And you know, it was great because we'd always got one another to lean on when the success came along. Because it had been 5 years that we'd been on the road, and by that time we'd become a cracking live band. We always struggled with the studio, getting our sound across in the studio. I don't think we ever really cracked that. But nevertheless, you know, after Get Down and Get With It in 1971, the hits started coming.
Yeah.
And we started to write our own material. And, you know, I used to do the songwriting and Nod would fill in the lyrics. And it worked really well.
Yeah.
And, it was great.
I was saying earlier to another presenter that Get Down and Get With It, the first time I heard that, I was lying on a beach towel on a beach in the sun, and it came on the little transistor radio I had, and I'm like, what's this? I love this. I absolutely loved it. How did you hear the news that you got your first number one?
It would always be the same. The office in London, you've got to think this is 1970s. People didn't have cars. People didn't go abroad on holidays. They didn't get on planes. And I was, the band, because there were four of us in the band, our manager, Chas Chandler, said, we can only afford to give one of you a phone. And I was the baby of the band, but he gave me the phone.
Right.
So it was put in my house. And when the chart day came, more often than not, I was still in bed, and my mum would answer the phone, and they'd say, "Oh, your son's number one." So she put the phone down. She shouted up the stairs, "James, you're number one!" And then just afterwards, the rest of the band would all have to go to the nearest phone box to their house, and they would ring in. And, you know, I'd tell them that we were number one, but we never, ever were too reliant on that. Somebody could have been joking or messing around, or you would have to listen to Alan Freeman, the great Alan Freeman,
on
the chart rundown.
On Sunday night,
And it's only recently I found out that the Beatles used to always, you know, they had to hear that chart rundown.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned Chas Chandler just now. Now, I've got a very good friend, Paul Nooney, who is a bass player in a local band. He's also like an encyclopedia of music knowledge. So I asked him to come up with a few questions for you today. One of the ones he came up with was, did having former bass player Chas Chandler from The Animals as your manager have any benefits on the role of the bass in Slade, or indeed were there any negatives? You know, was he sort of breathing down your neck as the bass player?
it was the opposite. Chas admitted to me that he was just terrified of the way I played, and he wouldn't pick up a bass ever in front of me.
Yeah.
And not only that, every time we were in the studio, and they, you know, let's hear some drums, and they get the drum sounds, hear the guitar, a bit of bass, And I'd always play that boom, 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 boom from the beginning of the Animals single.
Yeah.
And used to hate it. And I played it for years and years, and in the end, she said, "Don't you think that's wearing a bit thin, Jimmy?"
Well, funnily enough, again, Paul Nooney, my friend, he saw you live back in the day, and he said, "I remember Jim Lee doing a bass solo that incorporated the lead guitar part of Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix in it. I thought he was a phenomenal bass player. My favourite song of theirs was How Does It Feel?" Yeah, I mean, that's probably not quite nice to hear, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and How Does It Feel was the first song I ever wrote when I was about 30.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful song as well, isn't it?
I'd had it knocking around for a long time.
Right.
And the rest of the band would have heard me, you know, if we went somewhere and there was a piano, a place. And then when we made Flame, the film, the question was, "Have you got anything for a sort of theme tune?" And then I said, "Yeah."
Right.
Here it is.
Right. I mean, it was Chas Chandler that really encouraged you to write more of your own material, wasn't it?
It wasn't just encouraged, that was a big boot up the backside.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
Okay, right. I want to talk about your songwriting. I mean, all the hits were written by yourself and Noddy Holder. How did that work between you? I mean, was one on lyrics and one on the tunes and all that?
Well, the way it would work, I was the one that came up with the song, you know, the tune.
Yeah.
But I would always have lyrics, and I realised that, you know, I was very taken with the Beatles with, you know, "Please Please Me" and that, "Come on, come on,
yeah,
come
yeah.
on, come on, yeah. come on," and all that. And so I always wanted to incorporate repetitive stuff in the lyrics. So when I wrote the songs, I would have lyrics that would repeat, you know, like "Goodbye to Jane," "I say you're so young, you're so young," and so on and
sure,
so forth.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
"And we get wah, 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 we get wah, 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 and I don't know why, and I don't know why." So it's dead simple.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles, of course, "She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where I got that from. So I would always have bits that were in there. With "How Does It Feel," obviously, "How Does It Feel," and the middle eight words, yeah. you know. But yeah. I always like this repetitive thing.
Yeah.
So, and then I'd take it to Nod. And it was great working with the singer in the band, because if the singer wanted to pull a sort of moody, you know, then you got problems,
right.
You know, on the writing. So everything was waved through, and it made our sort of musical output really easy.
Yeah, good.
Although there was always a pressure when we started going in at number one, actually entering the chart at number one, there was nowhere else to go, and I always really felt the pressure very badly. And I was talking to Paul McCartney about it many years ago in the mid-80s, and he said, "Oh, yeah, we had that."
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a Lennon and a McCartney that were both coming up with the songs, whereas with us it was me that was coming up with the song, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
and taking it to Nod. So, you know, it was a lot of stuff. There were A-sides, B-sides, albums, you know. I mean, we had a load of number one albums, you know, did really well.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, I mean, I was sitting here listening to your... very complimentary intro to my interview.
Thank you.
I thought, well, that sounds quite impressive.
Well, it is. It's very impressive. One thing that's always puzzled me was one of your trademarks was the crazy spelling of Slade song titles. How did that come about?
Well, we'd had Get Down and Get With It. And obviously there's Clap Your Hands, Stamp Your Feet.
Yeah.
And we didn't know that, well, you know, it wasn't mooted at that time that was going to be our trademark, and that was just a number that we finished our show with.
Yeah.
So after we'd done "'Cause I Love You," and it was called "Because I Love You."
Right.
And I just thought that was the record was obviously great, you know, but the title was wet. So Chas rang me and I said, "Look, you know, I've been thinking about this 'Cause I Love You. Why don't we have the record opening with stamping and clapping?"
Right.
So it faded in, and then we put some claps on the record, and then there was this thing about the spelling, you know, this "Because I Love You." What about "'Cause I Love You"?
Yep.
And then it was, you know, okay. So and then came the you know, what about C-U-Z, 'cause I love you. And that was C-O-Z, wasn't it? 'Cause I love you. And so that started the whole misspelling thing. We, you know, we had the follow-up, look what he'd done, and we spelt that, and we carried on, but we got into really hot water with the teaching authorities.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet, yeah. Okay, brilliant. Well, now I've got another question from Paul, the bass player here. Yep. What part of your songwriting process was the bass introduced? Did you ever write with the bass, or was it always guitar or piano? And was bass just part of the arrangement recording process?
Yeah, bass was the last thing I thought about.
Right.
It was the easy bit, you know. Really, I mean, people do ask me about this, but really, I was born a creative person,
yeah.
And I think a lot of, if you read about, you know, your Mozart or Beethoven or any of those people, but, you know, the same thing crops up. You don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
You know, I can be walking down the street or talking to someone and I've heard John Lennon talking about that exact same thing. Specifically, being slightly bored, you know, is good for creativity.
Really?
And you get a bit sort of angry with your boredom, and then suddenly, you're on a roll, go to the piano, and something comes out, just like that. Or even just walking down the street. And I often say to people, you know, you don't want to be walking down the street with me. I'm liable to cross the road, and if you follow me, we're liable to get run over. My brain is just doing stuff all the time.
Yeah,
I can't
sure.
do anything about it.
Sure. Now, we're in October. Christmas is coming, and that song will be coming again, won't it? Now,
sure.
You mentioned your mum earlier, didn't you? And your mum had quite a key role in originating that song, shall we say.
That was my mother-in-law.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, my mother-in-law. Yeah, I was down at my wife's house. We weren't married. And this was in 1972, and the year before, Merry Christmas. And there's an article about White Christmas in the newspaper, and my mother-in-law, they never really saw me as, you know, good enough for the daughter.
Oh, anything, right.
That sort of thing, you know. You know, what are you with him for?
Oh, dear.
And she got this article on Bing Crosby and White Christmas. She said, it says here that White Christmas was recorded and it's been selling forever. Why don't you write a Christmas song? Well, I was really angry.
All right, yeah.
You know, and I thought, don't tell me what to do. You know, we'd had a few number ones by then.
Right.
And I think Goodbye to Jane was in the chart.
Yeah.
And at that point, and I said, look, we're a rock and roll band. We don't write Christmas songs. So that the next year when, and Chaz was always the dreaded phone call, Jimmy, how's the writing going, man? You know, he's asking me how the writing was going.
Pressure.
We were in America, and I was really homesick, and I was tired, and I was ill.
Yeah.
And and he said, I booked this studio time in New York. John Lennon's finished his album at the record plant on time. They'd kept 2 weeks for him to run over. So I've taken the time. He said, so it'd be good. To have something to record. And he said, hey, Jimmy, it'd be good to be number one for Christmas Lake. So I put the phone down, and I thought, crikey, you know. So I just got in the shower, because it wasn't going to be long before we were going off to the gig.
Right.
And I just kicked my own backside, and I said, come on, clever dick, do it. And I just came up, it was loads of ideas all swimming around, and I got it really quickly, and then I thought, well, what's it about? And I could hear my Chaz saying, it'd be nice to be number one for Christmas. Then my mother-in-law saying, why don't you write a Christmas song? And I just went, so here it is. Merry Christmas, everybody's having. And that was that. But the trouble was, Nod didn't want to do it.
Oh, no,
he
right.
He said, you know, I don't write it. You know, we're a rock and roll band. And Don and Dave didn't want to do it either. I mean, it has been a double-edged sword for us because, you know, that's, a lot of people only remember us for that. Younger people,
sure,
they don't know, you know, they don't know about the Slade that you know and
yeah.
Paul knows.
Yeah,
But you know, it's been such a thing for us since that, and it doesn't look like it's ever going to go away.
No, it doesn't.
I was told by the Performing Rights Society some years ago that it was the most heard song on the planet.
It's not surprising. I mean, it was back in the charts last year. It was top 40 again last year.
Well, and this is all over the world.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like in Kazakhstan and places like that. You know, like what?
So is it the gift that keeps giving every year?
Yes, but you see, the thing is, financially, it's only got a couple of weeks to make its money.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's and because certainly the way I look at it really is that Christmas is a very stressful time for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to go and spend money. I don't get involved in all that stuff personally. You know, I just, you know, have my Christmas dinner. We have the family round. It's always very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, health permitting.
Yeah.
And that's the way I do Christmas. But people have this thing where they need to spend money and find something to buy for people. So it creates this stress and this horrible phrase, are you ready for Christmas?
I couldn't agree more.
Our record becomes synonymous with that stress.
Right, yeah.
But when people hear it at a party, it's a big knees up.
Oh, absolutely.
Then it's okay, you know. But it's sort of, when that record's on, that people tend to, you know, the BBC and whatnot tend to leave it later now.
Yeah, we're not allowed to play any Christmas records until the 1st of December, but probably should be a week or two after that, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now, playing the bass in Slade, was that your choice, or was it something that you ended up doing because nobody else wanted to do it?
No, not at all. I when I was at school, I was in the youth orchestra, playing the violin, and then I heard this song, Apache, by the Shadows, and I didn't know what it was, and I must have been about 12, and I asked my older brother. It was like, the way I always describe it, you know the lottery when it came out, that finger that came down, it's you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was like that with me, and I just stood there stunned, and I said to my older brother, Ray, my late brother, Ray,
right.
What's this? And he just laughed at me. He said, it's an old song, you know.
Yeah.
It's the Shadows, it's called Apache, you know, and I was just besotted by this music that seemed to come from a godly place.
Good music's timeless, isn't it? You know, it doesn't really matter that it's an old tune. Yeah.
You're quite right.
Yeah.
And then they came out with Wonderful Land, and I had to get a guitar.
Yeah.
I started to learn the guitar, and I didn't bother. You know, I bought a book, Learn How to Play Guitar by Bert Wien, but
right.
I just threw it away, and I just started playing immediately. You know, I didn't even know how to tune it,
but
I was off and running.
I bought the same book, and I threw it away because I was absolutely hopeless at it.
Well, with me, it just looked like a load of work, but I mean, I this is the way I am, you know, I can just sort of walk through the walls and just make something happen. But then I thought, well, hang on, if I'm playing the guitar, and I was very, very shy, and I thought, well, people are going to look at me. So and then the bass player in this little band I was in left, and I said, oh, I'll play bass, and the rhythm guitarist can play guitar. And they said, well, don't you want to play guitar? And I said no, because, you know, I don't want to be looked at.
No, right.
Because people looked at the lead guitarist and they looked at the singer.
Right. You were the good looking one in the band, though, weren't you? I mean, I would have thought you would have got a lot of attention anyway.
well once I was talking to Nardin, and we went to do a TV show, and I was looking at us, and the two of us, I said, you know, my wife's aunt said, looks wise, I was the best of a bad bunch, and then she said, speak for yourself, mate.
Well, that's praise indeed, isn't it?
So he must have thought he looked like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Anyway, Jim, listen, I've got a really good reason to thank you and the rest of Slade for releasing your very first album, Beginnings, when you were known as Ambrose Slade.
That's right.
Now, I actually had a copy of that, and some years ago I foolishly sold off all of my vinyl when I didn't think I'd ever play it again. Now, of course, I'm back into it and I'm buying all my albums back. But I put Beginnings on eBay and was astonished at how the bidding went up. It went past £100, it went past £200. I ended up getting nearly £300 for that album.
Did you go on holiday?
Yeah. So thanks. I wish I had it back now, though, but there you go. Okay, that's brilliant. Now, your solo album, Therapy, how did it come about?
Well, the band had finished, and I felt in a sort of, in a very sort of uncomfortable place.
Yeah.
My dad became very ill and died. And I was having to look after him.
Yeah.
With, you know, because he got dementia and he was, you know, things get
very difficult
stuff.
Time. Yeah.
He's been involved in it.
But yeah.
It takes a lot of mental strength, and it takes a position to look after people in that state.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of forgive them a lot, you know, and it's not the person you knew. It's something that's happening. It's an illness.
Yeah.
So after that, you know, when my dad died, I did two things. One was I played the Robin Hood Club.
Yeah.
And then that went really well.
Mm-hmm.
That was in, 15 years ago now, 2002.
Mm.
And then the boss of the Robin Hood, who said it was a stupid idea for me to play the guitar, to sing, and to play with people, only two people, and I didn't even know. He thought I should have a big band, you know, with dancing girls and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and it was more of a jam session, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And but, I caught up with...
I really enjoyed doing it.
I caught up with a couple of the tracks on YouTube that you played during that session, and it sounds fabulous. You sound like you've been rehearsing for about 5 weeks for that. It was amazing.
To get up to speed. The boss of the club said, Jim, he said, you mean you're going to sing? You're going to play guitar? And you've never done either of those things before. Who's going to talk to the audience? I said, me.
Yeah.
Who are you going to play with? I don't know. Do you know anybody? And it was like that. He recommended the drummer. And that's how it came together.
Yeah.
And you know, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And he rang me up the day after the gig. He said, well, when are you coming back? I said, never.
Oh.
I said, I'm going to make an album. It's going to be called Therapy.
Right.
And I did it. Did the album, and the lyrics are very introspective. I mean, but the songs, you know, it's, you know, the sort of songs that I wrote with Slade, they've all got these strong choruses.
Right.
Or some vibe that's important, you know, like with The Smile of Elvis, or Could God Be a Woman, which is the oddie on the strange one on the album.
Right.
But the album got fantastic reviews when it came out. I mean, you know, all 5-star, you know, it was just great. That I released it I think it was 8-9 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
It sold for years and years and years on the internet. And then my brother took it to Wienerworld, this little record company in London. They've been in business for 36 years, and I thought, well, that sounds right to me. And they thought it was great, and they said, does he want a re-release on this, you know? And I didn't want them to put the live album with it, because I thought it sounded, you know, it didn't sound like other people's live albums. It sounded live. You know?
Right, yeah.
Live.
Yeah, yeah.
They put it out with the Therapy album, and once all over again, the reviews were really fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't believe how good they were, and I felt so, you know, edified is the word I use, sort of, you know, fed by the, you know, the feedback, and it was great, and I didn't expect that particularly.
No. Well, I haven't heard the whole of the album, but I've heard snippets of it, all of the songs, and they sound like great songs and particularly well-crafted arrangements. Do you spend a lot of time on that?
Well, it's another thing that I don't really know how it comes. It's just as it goes. I drive engineers mad.
Right.
Oh, I want to put a middle eight in there. They're going, oh... There was this one producer that, I mean, Chas Chandler produced Slade, and then I produced Slade, and then we had this guy for a short time, John Punter, who did Run Runaway and the Rogues Gallery album and My Oh My.
Yeah.
My Oh My was a big hit for us, but he used to turn around to me and say, Jim, stop, too much information. No. Just leave it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I was. I would always, you know, I'd always be really very sort of forthright, you know, once I've got an idea. And the rest of the band used to get cheesed off me as well.
Yeah, so, fantastic.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But it's really strange because not only has the album been re-released, we found some fan footage.
Right, yeah.
The Robin Hood. It's just sort of a bit wobbly and a bit fuzzy.
That must have been what I saw on YouTube, I think. Yeah.
And so the record, my brother showed it to the record company and they said, that's really exciting.
Right.
I've obviously I'd seen it. You know, my brother had a meeting with me in London. He said, "Now about this DVD, you know." I said, "What DVD?" I said, "No, it's not good enough to put out on DVD. It's wobbly and it's fuzzy." And he said, "Well, the record company said it has to come out."
Right.
I said, "Well, what do they mean? You know, it's my stuff." And he said, "They've already sold it to the Americans."
Wow.
And I thought,
amazing.
I've got no choice then, had I?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was already coming out in America, you know. So there you are, you know. So things have just, you know, with the re-release therapy. And I've got another album waiting to come out.
This is, what is it, String Theory, is it?
String Theory,
yeah. Yeah. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I'm a one-man string orchestra. And once again, they were the instruments, you know. I mean, I played the violin, but I didn't play viola and I didn't play cello and I didn't play double bass, but I did on the album.
Well,
once again, it's a case of just saying I'm going to play this now, and you don't have anything in between. And you don't, you took away all ideas of the fact that you can't play it and just get the thing
and do it. Yeah,
as somebody in one of the music shops, because now I was dealing with all these, you know, string instruments, and one of the people who worked in the shop, and I said, "Now this cello," he said, "Oh yeah, do you want a cello, Jim?" He said, "What you're going to do, just like you've done with all the rest of the instruments, you're just going to take it, strangle it by the neck until something happens." So I'd go in there and I'd just start playing, you see, and they thought I was like Pinocchio. Thought I was the boy, the wooden boy who suddenly talked.
You're a natural.
They were just amazed at me, you know. So, I mean, I'm not doing anything for me. I'm just doing, you know.
Yeah.
But it was like being a child again and doing a painting and they're saying, "Oh, that's good, stick it on the wall," you know.
Fantastic.
That kind of thing, you know. So that, once again, that was surprising.
Yeah, and your 2007 album Therapy is also coming out on vinyl now as well. Where can people get hold of that?
I think it is on vinyl, it's been out for some time.
Okay.
Maybe through the internet or you know, Wiener World.
Yeah, or you've got a website as well, haven't you?
Yeah, so, I've got a website. I'm not really into tech.
No.
In fact, I'm not into it at all.
Right.
I've got a website, allegedly.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever looked at it.
Well, we'll put some links up on our website to that later on. So, lovely. So, are we going to see Jim Lee on stage anytime soon?
Well, I'm doing a question and answer thing for the release of the Robin Hood DVD.
Right.
At the Robin Hood Club in Bilston on November the 5th. It's for charity.
Lovely.
Completely, every penny is for charity. The club's not getting any money, only the bar.
Right,
I'm not getting any money. So they're going to show the DVD. There's a poem being written about me by a massive fan, apparently, and he's written lots of poems about the band. So... And so he's going doing a poem, then they're showing the DVD, then I'll come on and do this question and answer thing. It's seated, and so that there's a lot less people. So obviously for that sort of thing, you can't have people sort of rammed up to the front of the stage for all that time.
Yeah.
So that's how that's going. My brother wants me to play something at the end, but the only thing is I've got this cancer stuff stuff, you know.
Yes. How are things going, Jim? I know you've had a difficult time over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's the last 3 years, actually.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
But it's the treatment that slowed me down such a lot. So when I'm recording, and I have been recording and writing, I never stopped once I finished in Slade.
Yeah.
I was still writing and still recording. So it slowed me down a lot mentally.
Sure.
Because with the type of cancer I've got, they remove your testosterone apart from a tiny little bit of it.
Right.
And then, God, that's enough. It messes with your brain, you know.
Yeah.
And for someone who's like this sort of go, 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 I tend to be just lying at the back of the studio and just going to sleep.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
And it's not a pleasant sleep. It's to sort of to escape this sort of strange feeling. I've got this fatigue.
Yes,
know?
Yeah.
And
very
so
difficult.
That's the way I've been. So, but I stopped the treatment in May.
Right.
But it's going to take till 2019, they think.
Wow.
For me to get back to how I was. The cancer may come back with it.
Right.
I don't know. They never do know.
No. Well, we certainly wish you well, Jim, and you know, you're carrying on writing. We're going to hear your latest release at the moment. That's The Smile of Elvis.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that song?
Well, that was funnily, you know, when I was rehearsing for the Robin Hood, where that got written, my son came into the room and said, "You have to wave at me," because it was a big sound. And he said, "Dad, your tea's ready." So I just put the guitar down, and I'd seen this program about Elvis Presley, and it was his family talking about him, and one of his relatives said, "You know, the thing is, you know, Elvis, you know, people know him for snarling and sexism, being sexy and hip swinging and all that, you know, but nobody talks about his smile." And it just came to me, and I just thought, "Smile of Elvis." And I was just walking towards the kitchen to get my dinner, and I just went, "If I could smile, the smile of Elvis."
Yeah.
And I came up with it just as easy as that. That's what I was talking to you about before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely
wonderful. Out of the
blue. Absolutely wonderful. Well, it's been an enormous pleasure talking to you today, Jim, but time's got the better of us, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to move on. So we'll finish up with that song and wish you very well with your health and all your future projects. And hopefully one day we'll actually talk about String Theory being released. How about that?
Yeah.
Lovely. Jim Lee, thank you very much. Here is Jim and The Smile of Elvis.
If I could smile, the smile of Elvis, then I could smile.